The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today we're diving into, well, a really fundamental piece of thinking that changed how we view science, maybe even how we think about knowledge itself. It's Karl Popper's The Logic of Scientific Discovery.
Yeah, it's a huge book. And our mission today is basically to give you the essentials. For, gosh, centuries, people, scientists included, thought science was all about proving theories were right, you know, getting that certainty.
Right, finding evidence to confirm your ideas.
Exactly. And Popper just comes along and says, hold on, maybe that's not the right way to look at it. Maybe that whole assumption is flawed.
It's a massive shift, isn't it? If science isn't about proving things true, then what is it about? That's kind of the first big question Popper throws at you.
It is. And the core idea, the one you really need to grasp right away, is falsifiability.
Falsifiability,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He totally flips the script. Popper argues that what makes a theory truly scientific isn't whether you can find evidence for it, but whether it's possible, in principle, to find evidence against it. Can it be proven false?
So the more vulnerable a theory is to being shot down, the more scientific it actually is. That sounds counterintuitive.
It does at first, but think about it. Why should you, listening now, care about this? Well, we're drowning in information, right? Claims, theories, explanations for everything.
Everywhere, yeah. Some sound really convincing, too.
Exactly. And Popper gives you this incredibly powerful tool, this way of thinking, to sort of draw a line, to distinguish between genuine scientific inquiry, knowledge that can actually grow and change, and things that are maybe more like dogma or pseudoscience, things that can explain anything and therefore maybe explain nothing.
Okay, so it's a critical thinking tool for the modern age. Let's talk about the person behind it, Sir Karl Popper.
Right, 1902 to 1994. An Austro-British philosopher, hugely influential in the 20th century. He grew up in Vienna, read Vienna, which is this amazing intellectual hub.
And he was around the famous Vienna Circle, the logical positivists.
He was, but critically. He knew them, engaged with them, but fundamentally disagreed. They were obsessed with verification, finding that rock-solid, logical foundation for knowledge based on proving things true through observation.
Absolute certainty was their goal.
Pretty much. And Popper looked at that and thought, I don't think that's actually possible logically. He saw it as chasing a mirage.
And wasn't there a key moment, like an aha insight for him? Something about Einstein versus others.
Yes, exactly. It was this stark contrast he saw. On one side, you had Albert Einstein and his theory of general relativity.
Oh, wow.
Einstein made these incredibly bold, incredibly precise predictions. Like, he calculated exactly how much gravity should bend starlight during an eclipse if the measurements were even slightly different.
The theory is in trouble.
Big trouble. Maybe even dead. It was sticking its neck out, taking a massive risk.
Okay, so that's one side. What was the other?
Well, Popper looked at other really popular theories of the time. Thinkers like Marx, Freud, Adler.
Theories that were explaining, well, a lot of human behavior and history.
Exactly. They seem to explain everything. Take Freud's psychoanalysis. Whatever a patient did, the theory could account for it. It was either sublimation or repression or the Oedipus complex. There was always an explanation after the fact.
So no observation could ever really contradict it.
That was Popper's point. Same with Marxism, he argued. If a predicted revolution didn't happen, there was always an ad hoc reason, false consciousness, immature conditions, whatever. These theories seemed powerful because they couldn't be proven wrong by any conceivable event. They weren't taking any risks.
I see. So they were insulated from failure.
Right. And for Popper, that insulation, that inability to be falsified meant they weren't really engaging with the empirical world in a scientific way. They weren't learning from potential errors because errors were, in a sense, impossible.
So that contrasts the risky falsifiable theory versus the theory that explains everything and risks nothing that's the core.
That's the foundation for the whole book, The Logic of Scientific Discovery. Its purpose is really to set out a clear way to tell science apart from non-science and to show how objective knowledge can actually grow, even without absolute certainty.
And he tackles two big philosophical problems head on. You mentioned verificationism, which ties into the first one, the problem of induction.
Mm-hmm. Induction is that common sense idea, right? You see one white swan, then another, then 100, 1,000.
And eventually you conclude, okay, all swans are white. You move from specific observations to a general universal law.
Precisely. But Popper, building on the philosopher David Hume, pointed out a crucial logical flaw. no matter how many white swans you see.
You haven't seen all possible swans, past, present, and future.
Exactly. So, logically, you can never be 100% certain that the universal law, all swans are white, is true based only on those observations. There could always be a black swan lurking somewhere.
So induction can't give you certainty, and that undermines the whole verification idea the positivists loved.
It pulls the rug right out from under it. If you can't verify universal laws, how can science proceed?
Okay, so that's problem one. What's the second?
The problem of demarcation, which is simply, how do we draw that line? How do we clearly separate genuine science, like Einstein's physics, from non-science or pseudoscience, like maybe astrology, or even, Popper argued, psychoanalysis and Marxism, as they were often practiced?
How do we tell the difference?
And Popper's brilliant solution tackles both problems at once. He says, forget induction and verification. Focus on deduction and falsifiability.
Okay, walk us through that. Deduction.
Deduction is logically sound. If you have a universal law like all swans are white and you find one single black swan,
then the law, all swans are white, is definitively logically false, proven wrong.
Bingo. You can't prove a universal law true with any number of examples, but you can prove it false with just one counterexample using pure deductive logic.
That's the asymmetry. Proof is impossible, but disproof is possible.
That's the key insight. So science advances not by piling up confirmations, but by proposing bold ideas, conjectures, and then trying really, really hard to knock them down to refute them.
Through testing, through experiments, through observation.
All designed to find those potential falsifiers. We learn by eliminating the errors, the falsehoods. It's a process of conjectures and refutations.
Okay, let's dig into that logic more. The black swan example really helps. One black swan sinks the all swans are white theory. A million white swans. Well, they support it, but they don't prove it.
Right. So why waste time looking for yet another white swan? The logically decisive move is to actively search for the black one. Search for the evidence that would disprove your theory.
And this solves the demarcation problem how? Remind us why verification failed there.
Well, verificationism runs into trouble because many actual scientific laws are universal statements, like laws of gravity or thermodynamics.
Yep.
You can't possibly observe every instance in the universe to verify them completely. So verification would rule out much of actual science.
If falsifiability doesn't have that problem.
Nope. Falsifiability just asks, does the theory make predictions that could, in principle, be contradicted by observation? Is there a set of possible basic statements, observations that would show the theory to be false? If yes, it's scientific. If no,
then it's not making contact with the empirical world in a testable way. It's not scientific.
Exactly. It's not necessarily meaningless, Popper would say. It might be important philosophical or metaphysical stuff, but it's not science. Science requires risk.
So a theory is more scientific if it takes more risks. If it forbids more things from happening.
That's a great way to put it. A good scientific law is like a prohibition.
Mm.
It says this particular thing cannot happen. The law of conservation of energy forbids perpetual motion machines. Einstein's theory forbade starlight bending in any other way than his precise calculation.
Whereas a theory like, say, it will either rain or not rain tomorrow.
Forbids nothing. It's true no matter what happens.
Right.
It's unfalsifiable and therefore tells you nothing empirically useful. It lacks scientific content. Freud's theories, Popper felt, could often be stretched to fit any behavior, forbidding very little in practice.
Okay, but if science relies on observations to test theories, what about the observations themselves? Are they rock solid?
Ah, another great point Popper addresses. He says, no, the empirical basis of science isn't absolute bedrock. He uses this wonderful metaphor.
Swamp.
Yeah, the swamp. He says science is built on piles driven into a swamp. We stop driving the piles down, not because we've hit some ultimate solid foundation.
But because we feel they're firm enough to support the structure, at least for now.
Exactly. Observations, or basic statements, as he called them, aren't accepted because they're self-evidently true or because one person is certain about them. They're accepted provisionally, by convention, by the scientific community.
How does that work? How do we agree?
Through intersubjective testability. Basically, can other people repeat the observation or experiment? Is it public, open to criticism, and checking by others? Objectivity isn't about a scientist's personal state of mind, like being unbiased.
Which is probably impossible anyway.
Right. Objectivity comes from the method, from the fact that scientific claims and the evidence for them have to be public and testable by anyone. It's a social, communal process of criticism.
Okay, so the foundation is stable enough, provisionally agreed upon. How does this help us compare different scientific theories?
It leads to the idea that better theories are bolder theories. They have a higher degree of falsifiability. They stick their necks out further.
Meaning they make more precise predictions or cover a wider range of phenomena.
Both, ideally. Think about explaining planetary motion. Planets move in circles. That's fairly easy to test. And falsify, which it was. Planets move in ellipses. Better, more precise, harder to falsify, but still falsifiable.
And then Newton comes along.
Right. Newton's laws don't just say ellipses. They specify the exact shape, the speed at every point, based on universal laws of gravity and motion. That theory forbids way more potential observations than the simple ellipses idea. It has a much higher degree of falsifiability.
And because it survived testing for centuries, it was seen as a much better theory.
Precisely. And this connects to Popper's idea of simplicity. A simpler theory, for Popper, isn't necessarily one that's easier to understand or has fewer variables.
Oh, what is it then?
It's one that's easier to test, easier to falsify. It makes fewer excuses, fewer ad hoc adjustments to save itself. It's more exposed to potential refutation. That's scientific simplicity.
Okay, so theories are conjectures. We test them by trying to falsify them using observations agreed upon intersubjectively. What happens when a theory survives a tough test? We can't say it's verified, right?
Correct. We can't say it's proven true or even probably true in a mathematical sense. Popper introduces the term corroboration.
Corroboration? What does that mean exactly?
It's essentially just a report on the theory's past performance. It means the theory has faced severe tests, genuine, rigorous attempts to prove it false, and it has withstood them so far.
So it's like saying, we tried our best to break this, and we couldn't yet.
That's a perfect way to put it. Corroboration doesn't guarantee future success. It doesn't increase the theory's probability of being true. It just summarizes its track record against criticism up to this point.
That really demands a kind of intellectual humility, doesn't it? Even our best, most corroborated theories are still fundamentally provisional, always open to being overthrown by the next test.
Absolutely. And that leads nicely into the key themes, the big takeaways from Popper's philosophy. It really is a whole mindset shift.
Okay, let's summarize those. What's the first big message?
First, reject induction as the starting point. Science doesn't begin with just passively collecting observations. It starts with a problem, maybe sparked by an observation that contradicts an existing theory, and then a bold conjecture, a creative hypothesis, to solve it.
So you always observe with a question or a theory in mind. You're not a blank slate.
Never. Your observations are theory-laden, as philosophers say. Recognizing that is crucial for critical thinking in general. You always bring assumptions to the table.
Makes sense. Okay, second takeaway.
Second, science is fundamentally about error elimination. Knowledge doesn't grow by accumulating more and more proofs or confirmations. It grows by finding and removing falsehoods. Being wrong isn't a failure in the process. It is the process.
That's a powerful reframe. Learning happens when you identify and fix mistakes.
Mm-hmm. In science, in your career, in personal life, recognizing error is the engine.
Okay.
Third, this requires a blend of intellectual humility and boldness. You need the courage to propose really ambitious, risky theories that go beyond the current evidence of the boldness.
Sticking your neck out.
Right. But you also need the humility to genuinely want those theories to be rigorously tested and to accept it if they are found wanting. You have to be willing to let your pet ideas be proven wrong by evidence and logic.
That's a tough balance. Be bold, but be ready to be wrong.
It is. And the final theme ties it together. Truth is a regulative ideal. We might never achieve absolute, final, certain truth with a capital T.
Because any theory could potentially be falsified in the future.
Exactly. But we can still make progress towards it. Think of a sculptor removing chunks of marble to reveal the statue within. We approach truth by chipping away the falsehoods, the errors. We get closer, even if we never reach a guaranteed endpoint.
That's a really useful way to think about it. Eliminating what's wrong gets us closer to what's right, or at least less wrong.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And Popper himself had a way with words. Some really memorable lines capture these ideas.
Yeah, let's share a few key quotes or ideas.
Okay, first one, maybe the most central. Insofar as a scientific statement speaks about reality, it must be falsifiable.
So if it can't be falsified, it doesn't actually say anything concrete about the real world.
That's the gist. It might be mathematically true or logically true or maybe just empty talk, but it's not empirical science.
Okay, another one.
How about the swan quote again? Because it's so core. No matter how many instances of white swans we may have observed, this does not justify the conclusion that all swans are white.
That nails the whole problem of induction and the asymmetry between proof and disproof.
It really does. It's the logical bedrock. And maybe one more. The game of science is, in principle, without end.
Meaning it's a continuous process.
Yes. There's no final victory, no point where we say, okay, science is done, we know everything. As long as we can ask new questions and devise new tests, the process continues. To stop criticizing, to stop testing, is essentially to stop doing science.
Wow. Okay, those are powerful. Now, let's bring it home. How can someone listening right now apply this thinking in their everyday life outside of a lab?
Oh, there are tons of ways. One really clear example is in the business world, especially with the lean startup approach.
How so?
Well, your initial business idea is basically a conjecture, a hypothesis about what customers want or need.
Mm.
The minimum viable product, the MVP.
That's the test.
Exactly. It's designed specifically to get feedback quickly and cheaply, to try and falsify your core assumptions. Are people willing to pay? Do they use the feature? The whole fail fast mantra is pure pobber. You're actively seeking refutation to eliminate bad ideas quickly.
That completely changes how you view early failures. They're not disasters, they're just successful falsifications.
Right. Necessary data points. Or think about personal beliefs, especially limiting ones. We all have them, right? I'm not creative. I'm bad at math. I can't learn languages.
Yeah, and we tend to look for evidence that confirms those beliefs' confirmation bias.
Totally. Popper's approach flips that. Treat that belief as a hypothesis. I am not creative. Then ask, what specific observation, what single piece of evidence would falsify this belief?
Okay. Like if I managed to write a short story or paint something I liked.
Exactly. Then you design a small experiment. Try to write that story. Try the painting class. You actively seek the potential falsifier rather than just passively accepting the belief or seeking confirmation. It's about testing your own assumptions.
That's really practical. And maybe one more area.
How about social and political discourse? It's so full of claims.
Oh, yeah. Policies, ideologies.
Use falsifiability as a filter. When someone proposes a policy or makes a grand claim, ask, is this stated in a way that could actually be tested? Is there any conceivable outcome that the person would accept as proving their idea wrong?
So instead of vague promises like, this will make things better, demand something specific.
Yes. Push for measurable predictions. This policy will reduce unemployment by X percent in Y years. Or this educational reform will increase test scores by Z points. If the claim is specific and measurable, it's falsifiable. We can check the results.
And if it fails the test?
Then the policy hypothesis needs rethinking or discarding based on evidence, rather than letting vague, unfalsifiable ideologies just persist forever because they can never be proven wrong. It demands accountability.
That's a really valuable lens. You know, what surprised me most revisiting this was that idea about objectivity. It's not about being some perfectly rational, unbiased robot.
No, not at all.
It's about the method. It's about making your ideas public, testable, open to criticism from everyone else. That collective process creates objectivity, even if individuals are flawed.
It's a profound insight. The strength is in the system of criticism, not individual perfection.
So here's a thought to leave everyone with. What's one belief, one assumption you hold, maybe about yourself, maybe about the world, that you'd be willing to actively try and falsify this week? Put it to the test.
I love that challenge. And for me, the biggest enduring lesson from Popper is the deep connection between intellectual humility and progress. Being willing to be wrong, embracing that possibility, isn't just virtuous. It's literally the engine of discovery. Popper didn't just give us a philosophy of science. He gave us a methodology for rational thinking in a world where certainty is always just out of reach.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.